This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You are listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast, Suicide Squad.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't go with other boys. And don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to say. And please, when I go out with you, don't.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of iFanboy Special Edition, talking about the movie Suicide Squad. I'm Ron Richards, and I'm here with Mike Romo.
Hi, Ron.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm great. Excellent. I'm hot in my feet.
Oh, I'm hot too. Whew, summer. Summer in the city. That's for sure.
It's making me feel like a little bit of suicide. That's the only. Go ahead. Let's just do this.
So normally we're joined by our compatriot yes. Connor Kilpatrick. He is off on assignment, which I was like partially upset because this is a DC movie and it's got a little bit of Batman. But I think he might have drawn the correct straw in this game.
Oh, he had the best straw ever. It's perfect. This is an honor. I feel like, in a way, there's a poetic justice that it's just you and me talking about this film.
A little bit, considering our conversation earlier this year for the last DC film, Batman vs. Superman: Dawn of Justice, you and I were in very different places after that movie. I have a feeling that we're going to be closer together this time around. But before we get to that, let's go over the basics. All right, so this is Suicide Squad, directed by David Ayer.
And written by David Ayer.
If you're not familiar with David Ayer, he was one of the writers on Training Day, on The Fast and the Furious. Big writer, a lot of writer credits. You know, Training Day, Fast and Furious, SWAT, End of Watch, Fury, like that stuff. But he directed End of Watch. He directed Fury. He directed Street Kings, Sabotage, a bunch of movies. But relatively a newcomer to these big, you know, kind of tentpole movies, right?
Fast and the Furious.
He was a writer on Fast and the Furious, but he didn't direct.
But is this his first directing?
No. This is like his seventh directing, but it's his first it's his first really big, you know, like everybody all eyes on him. Yeah.
Yeah, felt like a first film. Somehow.
Yeah,
weird.
Yeah. This is the Suicide Squad team, which is, if we remember originally in the comics, Suicide Squad was brought to popularity in the 80s and 90s by John Ostrander, who worked on it, and the idea of taking a bunch of villains and putting them together on a team to do good, and if they go wrong, they get killed, and hence the term Suicide Squad. So there it is. Right. And this firmly fits in the world of Batman v Superman in the Snyderverse. Just
clutched right there.
Yeah.
Just right in
right
there.
Zack Snyder is an executive producer, I believe, along with Jeff Johns. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so before we get into the whether we liked it or not, we're going to, if you haven't seen the movie, we're going to talk about what happened. So there are going to be spoilers abound. So be warned. And I have a feeling we're going to get saucy. So, Mike, what did you think of Suicide Squad?
Well, Ron, you know, I've thought a lot about this.
Yeah.
And
wait, how long did you think about it, Mike? You have to clarify how long.
Well, the thing is, I had a split-second judgment,
okay,
and then I took a deep breath, and I realized that maybe I was being too quick. And
all
I realized
right.
that maybe, you know, it seemed to me that to judge this film, you can really go in a couple of different venues. One is just like, hey, I watched a movie on Friday, I'm going to react to it. But then there's these other sort of, I think, kind of commercially existential sort of film business questions that I have to ask when I think about this movie.
Sure.
And I realized that when I saw this movie, you know, I used to watch a lot of Hong Kong gangster films and kung fu films in the 80s, where that sort of reveled in this kind of like really make heavy, heavy dramatic sequences and then undercut them with goofy humor and really sweeping kind of themes and really like the subtlety by way of Freight Train, Bull in a China Shop, that kind of thing. And I thought, well, maybe in a way this is that kind of thing. Maybe this movie is less about my sensitivity and more for that kind of point of view. And then I thought about, well, I heard it only took 6 weeks to write and maybe we just got a little rushed. And so I've been making excuses and I've been feeling some angst, but at the end of the day, I think I just have to judge it and I'll bring those other elements. I have never been so profoundly insulted by a film, I think, in my life. And what's really incredible to me is that it's just, we all know that a superhero film begins with an origin story.
Yep.
So let's just do a bunch of them. And you know what? And when I pick up this pair of scissors, why don't I give that a origin story too? So I've read people going, "Hey, oh my God, the first act was so great!" And I'm like, "Are you freaking kidding me?"
Yeah.
It was like the first act. What? Just so we all know, is when we get introduced to these wonderful characters, and it's like Family Guy, you know, where the Family Guy says, "Hey, it's like, you know." It could be worse. I could be, you know, I could be a moose with a ketchup mustache, and it cuts to a moose putting a mustache on with ketchup going, man, this mustache looks great, but smells funny. And that's like that little thing. And we all laugh at that. That's how this movie felt, where it was constantly. And I just thought of that. Didn't take 6 weeks.
It's right? just, I'm right there with you. This movie perplexed me on multiple levels. Because on one hand, so we all heard about and just so you know, like you, I went into this movie trying to have an open mind. I understand that I flew a little bit off the handle with Batman v Superman back in March. I get that.
Maybe
that movie still is a pile of garbage, but.
This is hot garbage.
But going into this, I thought, okay, this is a little more lighthearted. The look and feel of the trailers were giving a different kind of tone. It was definitely the artwork. I actually like the artwork with the posters and some of the collateral around it. Yeah, and so I'm thinking, okay, you know, here's an opportunity that maybe DC's going to go in a different direction. And you know me, I like different directions, so I wanted to see that kind of that I wanted to revel in it. So I thought, I said, hey, you know, this might be really bad, but maybe we can have some fun with it. Yeah. Exactly. And I ended up walking out of the movie being immensely disappointed because whatever fun I thought I could have was kept from being had due to extremely lazy filmmaking. And
that's what's so insulting about
it,
Ron.
Exactly.
Is that
exactly.
And there was one review I saw that said all of the actors in Suicide squad looked like they would rather be in prison. And I think the reason why we had this problem is apparently they had major reshoots.
Yeah.
Just even a couple of months ago.
That was the rumor was that after the success of Deadpool in February, Warner Brothers was like, oh shit, exactly. go back and make it funny, right? Was that what you heard? Or?
That's right. That's right. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. And you can see that there was this even, so this, is it David Ayer?
David Ayer.
He wrote the script. Apparently, you know, because in Hollywood, everything moves at the speed of light. You really have no time to do anything. Everything is, let's go. It's not like that at all.
Yeah.
It's just, for me to hear, I hear this excuse that, oh, you know, he only had 6 weeks to write this script. And apparently, Ron, he had to see a therapist because the movie was getting just so dark while it was filming.
Oh,
my God. His own story drove him to a therapist. No, he wasn't driven to a therapist because his movie was dark. It's because he was worried that this was going to be the last thing he would ever make in this town.
Yeah.
That's what the therapy is all about. And the problem is I think the intention was there. My friend was going to see it with me. He said, I heard it's really dark. And there was this thing where you could see the glimmers that – you like every scene, three quarters of the way through was this dark thing, and then this new piece of footage that undercut whatever was going to happen.
Yeah.
Some goofy quip that undercut all the seriousness. Because it's like they wanted to have it both ways. They wanted to have this dark film with mad hijinks a la Marvel films, and so it couldn't find its balance because it was trying to do everything all at once, and it just resulted in a mess.
Yeah, it definitely faltered where Deadpool prevailed, in that Deadpool got that balance of humor and darkness and fucked upness just right. Whereas Suicide Squad, I'm almost reminded, like I want to think of like a voltmeter or something like that, where it's just like if you looked at the recording of the needle, it would just go all the way to 10 and then back down to 1 and then all the way to 10 and back down to 1 and whether it was with ultraviolence or with attempts at humor or with just, you know, a cat and a laser toy of a plot. You know what I mean? Imagine a kitten on its back trying to figure out where the story is going. Because I was trying to explain it. I was talking about it earlier today, and I was like, yeah, well, so in the movie, there is the main plot is, you know, as we know for those of us who read comic books, know that Amanda Waller works in the government. She gets the approval to put together Task Force X, which is a bunch of, you know, superpowered or, you know, enhanced people that are going to make this team that can go, you know, that can fight the metahuman war. You know, the question they posed in the beginning, which we saw in the trailer, was, you know, okay, we just had this incident with Superman. What if the next Superman comes in and kills the president? What are we going to do? You know, and they're trying to arm themselves for the metahuman war that's coming. And so, and we get it. So that's the main A plot. And then what you then have is that, okay, we established that, but now we need to give them a problem. So let's have one of the worst villain or antagonist I've seen in a movie with this Enchantress that is just pointless. And so, like, they just, you know, they talk about a MacGuffin or Deus Ex Machina. This is where Connor would make fun of me because I can't say that word. But it was just like, well, we need something for them to fight against. So let's have this thing that is just going to happen. And it just seems so forced. And then all the while, the undercurrent is you had a Joker movie wanting to happen that they just wouldn't let happen.
Right. The Joker movie was like this weird commercial break in between things. But it's even more insidious than that. It's like, you know what I really need to see again is some sort of doomsday bad thing happening with swirling gas in the middle of the sky, spiraling into the city.
Swirling,
you know what
swirling
I mean?
Cloud, unnamed unnamed menace that we're not going to tell you what's going on, but just that it's gonna kill us all. And it's just like, come on. It's like...
And you've done a good job so far because, like, as crazy as it sounds, that is actually the plot. Like, you have the first hour where we're introduced to the many, many members of the Suicide Squad.
Yep.
And where you have these origin stories, and it's literally like this, friendly listener. It's like, oh, and then there's this guy. He's really bad. And then it's a 5-minute sort of music video set to like shop rock.
That said, though, I didn't mind the origins in the beginning because
it was an onslaught.
Well, yeah, it was an onslaught. But here's the thing: is that it's a fairly big team. You've got a lot of characters to deal with, and I actually like whenever there's an attempt at creativity with on-screen graphics and things like that. Like I always use the example. I always use the example of the Will Ferrell movie from 07, Stranger Than Fiction, that started off with the first 5 minutes of him going through his day, and there are all these like infographics around him as he was going. That was really like, you know,
those
innovative. Yeah, it was neat. So I was like, oh, cool. Okay, great. You know, give me these little kind of like, you know, give me these graphics, these bios. But then they went and only did it for a handful of characters and not the rest of the team. Or, you know, when the team comes together to fight the big bad, they just randomly introduce a dude who's like, oh yeah, he's on the team too, and we didn't get the whole intro to him, and so I'm like, oh well, he's the red shirt, he's gonna die, and sure enough, he dies
dies in 45 seconds.
Exactly. Right. And then they go through and they do that for, so they do the bios for Deadshot, for Harley Quinn, for Killer Croc, and who was the other dude? Diablo. And right. I'm missing one. Captain Boomerang, right? Boomerang, yeah, Digger right. Harkness. So they do that. And then right before they start moving to the second or third act, they introduce Katana, who, if you ask me, has a great costume with the Japanese flag mask or whatever, with no introduction whatsoever. Like, oh, yeah, she's coming too. Like, what?
Oh, yeah.
It was mind-boggling.
And you would argue... And they would hint at, oh, and by the way, she's got this really cool sword that eats souls. Like, yeah. Arguably the coolest part of the story, absolutely ever.
Is she a villain, or is she in the army? Like, why? Like, what was her relationship? Like, it just made no sense. So.
Well, she was a good guy person, and she was going to keep them in line because having a bomb in your neck isn't enough.
Right.
There's a couple of things, and we'll lead up to the plot. But one of the things that is really intense about this movie is that it's a lot of gunfire.
A lot.
Like, there is a preposterous amount of gunfights in this, to the point where it would seem like Deadpool did it, and they were able to make it in a way that kind of satirized it.
Yep.
Here, it became really, maybe I'm sensitive, sort of uncomfortable in its ickiness. And it's sort of, I hate to say glorification of it, but there was just nothing but rain of bullets and all this sort of thing. But what was so crazy about it is that, I don't know if this is, I guess this must have been part of the original 6-week script, but all of the people that they're fighting against are people who had died and been transformed into basically zombie ninjas.
Mindless
right?
ones, yeah. Like mindless.
Yeah. So it's a lot like... When back in the day, Battle of the Planets, Gotcha Man, when they were doing all the killing, and in the Japanese version, they were people, but in the American version, they were robots, so they could just kill as many as they wanted. It was that kind of thing here. So there was all this crazy violence, but you know, it really didn't matter because they were just CG characters anyway.
Right.
And the thing in Deadpool, when there was violence, it was actually people dying, and so it made it stick a little bit more, and it made this was sort of like glorifying it, giving you all this violence, but without any of the consequences whatsoever. So the Deadshot aspect of it, his capabilities, Harley Quinn's sort of crazy violence capabilities, all of that were all kind of numbed out because at the end of the day, it didn't really matter. They were just kind of mindless.
And that's at one point, like towards the end of the movie, when they're walking through an area where the fight had already happened, and they're literally walking on expelled shells, bullet shells.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, that made me, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of gunfire in this. I don't know. And so going back to the characters, though, you know, with the Suicide Squad themselves, you know, apparently Will Smith's character was just. I was wondering if there's any relation to his character in Wild Wild West, because because when he was with his daughter, he dressed like it. Apparently, as far as I could tell, there was no connection of Floyd Lawton as Deadshot from the comics to this movie. I was like, that's just Will Smith being Will Smith.
That's all it was.
Right.
And I've never seen a more miserable actor in my life
to be a part of
this.
That's balanced with Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, which is potentially the closest to the best thing in the movie. Like, it's the closest to a Robert Downey Jr. As Iron Man, like, owning a role in the DC universe yet. Like, this is, like, I can't imagine anyone else playing Harley but Margot Robbie now.
And I think it's Robbie. But
oh, it's Robbie. Okay,
but I was a double B. But the thing is, I think you're right. I'm not. I think it was a B. I think she was badly directed. I still felt like she felt restrained. The thing is, for me with Harley Quinn, and we'll get to the Joker later. I need to feel uncomfortable, even though I'm elated, I'm excited, I'm laughing at her jokes. I need to be kind of scared of her a little bit. That's just me. And I always felt very safe with her. I felt that she was playing for laughs, maybe because most of the stuff that we saw was from the reshoots. But I didn't feel a sinister vibe from her, and I know that's not necessarily her. I think she gave her the most of herself to her performance, but I felt like she was dumbed down or muted down in the editing. I thought her New York accent or the Bronx, whatever she was trying to do.
It came and went.
Yep. The problem is I can't imagine a tougher direction. It's got to feel cartoony, but it's got to be grounded. It's got to be kind of over the top, but it's got to live in this world. And I feel like she did the best that she could, but there were times when it just didn't sound good at all.
That reminded me that it did. Yeah, the accent definitely did come and go. But that said, I mean, I thought she owned it for me. I thought it was a nice touch.
Absolutely. I was never distracted. I never thought, well, Margot is not having a good time doing this.
Right.
I thought she went with abandon. She handled some very intense scenes, I thought, really well. Should we talk more about the other guys? This is a very schizophrenic film, and I feel like I'm schizophrenic when I'm talking about it because there's so many things that bothered me and made me scratch my head. This did feel I will admit, I've never seen a Fast and the Furious movie. I'd like to. They just make it very hard to see digitally.
Yeah.
But it felt very much like we're going to make a Fast and Furious film for the superhero genre. We're going to get one of the writers, and this is going to be a slam dunk. And for some reason, some of the characterizations, they just felt there was a lot of stereotyping.
I think you've got to do that in these kind of movies where it's got to be very obvious and kind of hit you over the head. And the thing is that
I don't know if you have to do that anymore. It's 2016. I think you can be a little bit more subtle. I don't think the Hispanic guy has to be a gangbanger 100%.
Does Will Smith have to call him SA every time? And like, yeah,
it's insulting. It's lazy.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's DC Entertainment. I mean, that's the thing is that like I feel as if they're not even at the point where they're walking or running. They're still crawling, and they're still trying to figure out. Again, it goes back to that balance, and you know, and the thing is that like the balance between the government involvement. I thought Rick Flagg, who was the super soldier who's going to lead them, was awful.
So bad.
You know?
So bad. Okay, but here's my thing. You say it's DC, and I got to say, I feel like this is a kind of lame thing to say, but I feel like this DC film is literally a direct-to-China film. And here's what I mean.
Oh.
Because it's like you have – if you look at this film is made to be subtitled. A lot of people don't speak that clearly, and so you can put whatever language you want in it. The way the story rolled out, the way it was super hyper dramatized, and then with all the flashbacks, including the crazy flashback when Rick Flagg goes, oh, the Entrantress, she disappeared, and as a moviegoer, oh, that's cool, she just left, and then later on, let me tell you exactly how she disappeared.
Right.
Like that's or when Will Smith is firing the gun, and then his daughter is appears in front of him and saying, "Don't shoot, Daddy." And obviously he's not really there. That's a very sort of like 80s Chinese kung fu movie or a gangster movie trope. It seemed like they just said, this movie is going to kill in China. We're going to make it a Chinese action film from the 80s and we'll dub it. It's going to be great.
Wow, you thought about this way more than I have.
Well, I used to love those movies. I was amazed there were not 60,000 doves flying while Will Smith was firing his guns, a la John Woo in Mission Impossible 3.
And so that, by the way, that was when he was standing on the police car. That scene. There was a hero moment. That was the only scene where my theater broke out into applause.
Oh, was that the hyper slow motion one?
Yep. Where like when they were on that street.
Another Chinese trope.
Yep.
It's cool when John Woo does it. It looks awesome. Yep. Mission Impossible 3 is a great example of that type of thing working really well. But that is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, so for me, it's like, oh, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, this movie isn't meant for Western. This is certainly not meant for me.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the laziest piece of shit I've ever seen.
Well, wait, talk about one last thing.
Like, think about the look and feel of it. This is so obviously shot on one soundstage over a couple of months. It felt so, the lighting was bad. It suffered from the same thing
that made me not love Pacific Rim as much as everybody else, which is don't give me action sequences at night and in the rain. Because that just shows me that you want to obfuscate what I'm seeing and make it hard for me to see any details, right? That's what it is. I mean, that's why they do that. I mean, there were not one but two scenes at night in the rain, and it was like, come on, I think there were some. If you are a fan, there were some moments that were fun. I think in the Harley Quinn origin sequence, did you catch there was a glimmer of that Harley dressed in the Harlequin outfit with the Joker and the Tux dancing like that Alex Ross painting from 98. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was cool. That was really great. Yeah. That was really great. But also very self-conscious.
That's the kind of nod that I got excited about, and nobody else, you know.
There were three or four things that there were some really beautiful shots. There were a couple of really beautiful things that happened there.
Yeah.
I'm going to just interrupt myself. And I really got to address, because we've been talking a little bit about the actors, and I was really, really curious about what Jared Leto was going to do with the Joker.
Right.
What did you think?
I'm torn. Because I thought
it was absolute garbage. So you tell me what you're torn about.
Here's the thing: is that I didn't mind what he was doing from a acting standpoint. The mannerisms and the way he was behaving, I cannot stand the character design. I think it's unbelievably distracting, and admittedly it's not what we're used to, and it's another take on the Joker and all stuff like that. But I found it difficult, uncomfortable when he was on screen. But I wonder if that's the point.
Well, I think that's interesting because I felt uncomfortable as well, but I felt like it was really self-conscious. I felt like he was very aware of what he was doing, you know, and I was really distracted by the teeth thing.
Yes, me too.
I kind of like the tattoo on the hand, but I felt like that, like I thought he was trying to be creepy for creepiness' sake. Now, I'm willing to admit, and I'm hoping that the original vision for the movie and the original vision for the Joker was much, quote unquote, darker than what we saw in this film. It has to be.
I thought we got way more than the Joker than I thought we were going to get. Like, going into this, I thought we were only going to see the Joker during the Harley origin sequence. I didn't realize that he was going to keep on being a little nagging, going, hey, let me be in this movie piece. And furthermore, I found myself being distracted not only by the teeth, but by, like, the bling, by, like, the necklaces and stuff. I was just like, it just seemed very I guess when you think of a character that is so legendary as the Joker, you think of it, and I wouldn't have thought of, you know, I was talking about this earlier where it's got to be difficult to follow in the footsteps of Heath Ledger, who took a character that we had preconceived notions about, Jack Nicholson, Cesar Romero, whatever we read in the comics, and take it in a different direction that we all were like, whoa, what did you think of that? But that was great because he made it his own and he gave it a ambiguity that we had never thought about with the Joker previously. We're like, is he crazy or does he know what he's doing?
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's just like, I don't buy the tattooed gangster angle.
That's what it seemed to be doing.
And I just didn't buy it. And I think that's the biggest problem with it.
It's a real tragedy, and I never felt menace.
Yeah.
Like, there was this one point where I guess some guy is owed a big debt, and they paid off the debt by just giving the guy to the Joker.
Yep.
And I'm like, great. I was like, oh, good, he's going to eat his face off.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, okay, so this is the moment where Jared Leto and this director guy, they're gonna shock us and Suicide Squad, oh, my God, they've done something so insane with the Joker. And all he does is get really, really close to kissing the guy.
Yep.
And that's it. And for me, like, there was so much lead up to it, and it just felt so tired. And okay, you're laughing, ha 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 ha. You're phoning it in. And for me, I think you're right, Ron. We've had these other Heath Ledger, we have these other Jokers. So for me, find your angle and stab people in the heart with it, right? Yeah, but he didn't even do that. And I need the Joker right now, especially right now. The Joker. The problem with the Joker is the Joker has to make you feel scared. You need to leave going, that guy, I'm terrified by his chaos. He's chaotic evil. And like there was nothing chaotic about him. I would even argue that when he dives back in to save Harley Quinn, like, I don't think he would have dived back in. I think the real Joker, maybe he's eating fucking chicken and a salad with a towel waiting for her to climb out of the acid. Maybe that's what he's doing. Jeez. But he doesn't dive in after her, right? Yeah. The guy is evil and chaos incarnate. And, by the way, there's a whole other angle. But, like, his relationship, there's such a weird relationship between the two that was for me, there's two disturbing things in the film other than the gun violence and the sensationalization of it without any consequences, was the relationship between the Joker and Harley Quinn is, at its core, a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. They didn't even dig into that enough.
No, yeah, they because it's one of the most abusive and just like mind fucky, you know, kind of thing. And like, and they never really chalked up as to why Harley Quinn falls for the Joker, yes, other than like she fell in love. Talk about a bad workplace romance. Like, they just dismiss it, and it just it really downplayed what is one of honestly Paul Dini and Bruce Timm's greatest works, you know, is the whole,
yes,
you know,
I agree,
the whole mad love story and all that sort of stuff. But, and the thing about it is that it you're right, is that we didn't have that sense of menace because it was not the A plot. It was the C plot at best. And what I find even more confusing is that, you know, so in addition to the Joker, you get in the flashback, you get Batman fighting the Joker, which, you know, for a Batman fan, that must be a huge deal. And that was over before you blinked, right? Yep. And then later in the movie, in the mid-credit sequence, we see Bruce Wayne more concerned about finding, you know, the Amanda Waller's info on the other people than is the Joker alive or not? Like, I thought when I was like, oh, he wants info on Harley and the Joker. Nope. You know, like, which is a total disconnect as well. But that said, I thought it was neat when the Flash is the one who busted Captain Boomerang. That was as a Flash fan, that was a nice little nod and a tie into the greater universe. I'm just looking for some strain of something to redeem the $6 I spent on this matinee earlier today.
Well, no, look, I was grateful. I was grateful for the shelter the theater provided me for those couple of hours.
The air conditioning was really top notch. It was really good.
Really terrific. Yeah. I had a comfortable seat. I was really curious.
Oh,
it was interesting to see them. Can't we just talk about my favorite possible thing? It's as if they had made the film and they realized, oh, we don't have that one sequence that all the Marvel movies seem to have where all the action stops and they all hang out for a little bit.
Yeah.
And they talk about stuff.
See? I think they're way too conscious of what other people have liked in other movies and tried to accommodate that.
Totally.
Also, the other problem I have is way too much. Like, I haven't seen a movie rely on popular music like this in a long time. Like it was just a barrage of iconic anthemic songs to make you feel a certain way because the scene isn't making you feel that way. And it was just like, and it just like was emotionally manipulative and just really just, I don't know. And like, and the thing was that we've seen 9 trailers about this movie and there's stuff in the trailers that weren't in the movie. Like, I found myself knowing about the movie going into it. And because we saw it in the trailer, the scene where they go into the bar, I'm like, all right, that's going to be a fun scene. That scene had all the fun taken out of it. The stuff that was in the trailer that's not in the trailer. Like, Harley pouring the drinks and all stuff like that, not in the movie.
And when he says he does this water, he's not drinking, and she says good move or whatever, I kept waiting for that line because that was actually a really nice beat. That entire scene for me, that seems like it must have been what it was like when they took lunch during filming, where they're just like, oh god damn it. And at one point, it's happening in the middle of when they're trying to do the thing. It's in the middle of the mission, and they're all like, let's get a drink. And then Flag says, you know what, you're all free to go. And dude, you can't free the.
My favorite part was the app that they had to trigger the bombs in their necks to blow them all had little headshots. And after they had killed Slipknot, did you notice that his headshot turned into an icon of just a neck that was like burned off? Like they actually had a blown up head avatar for him. Like it was like
oh my god,
like you're gonna follow that level of detail on this stupid plot point. It was baffling. And like and the fact that so this enchantress disappears, starts the swirling cloud of death. They're gonna go in, and you think that the mission is to take her out. No, the mission is to get Amanda Waller to safety. Like it, which flies in the face of all the bullshit that Amanda Waller gave to the Security Council and all the stuff earlier about this is about defending the country and being prepared against these metahumans. And at the end of the day, it's just like
also let's talk about there's two scenes that really interested me. For one was like I thought one of the most evil people was actually the Harley Quinn's guard.
Yeah,
who was truly evil, right? Yep. And we never see the Joker take him out, which I thought we would see, or her take him out. Like that guy was clearly hyper, super abusive to him. And there's a lot of
that guy never. That guy never got what was coming to him. Yeah,
that not so. Get. And then you have Viola Davis when they're clearing out the computers for some reason.
Yep.
Kills all of her fellow coworkers, and when that happened, I'm like, fuck this movie.
Yes,
that. Like there was no value in that, and I already get we were already there. But like maybe I was shocked, Ron, because all of the other dead bodies had just been CG characters.
Yeah.
But like that seemed so out of character and so jarring. Just again, just to be jarring.
Yeah.
Self-conscious again. Like I'm like that doesn't. You know what? That's not even shocking. That's just irritating, dude.
Yeah. That was really disturbing, actually, because it was like, and she like dismisses it like they didn't have clearance for this, and it's like,
wow.
That was rough.
So hard.
All right, Mike. Before we wrap up, I got two things that just annoyed the hell out of me.
Just two. Okay.
Just two. Well, one. And this is something in film, and I don't know the term for it. But when the big anonymous lightning swirling cloud weapon started attacking, right. There was a shot of a lightning bolt hitting like locations, and there was a shot of a lightning bolt hitting an aircraft carrier and cutting it in two, and then immediately cut to the secret military base where on the screen they had the same shot we just saw of the aircraft carrier getting cut in two by the lightning bolt. I want to know, where is the camera that they're looking at from? Right?
Because
if the aircraft carrier is out in the water, do they have another boat in the water with a camera on the aircraft carrier?
Yeah, but this is just they were taking some pictures. Right. And
they just happened to. That is a term in film, though. That is something where and it goes back
that
to
that is
what
lame.
About
this
lazy filmmaking.
They're watching it. Yeah. That is astoundingly bad.
Right. And I wish I could. So if someone knows what that term is, let us know on Twitter. But it's a term when on the big screens of Doom, you're looking at the same camera that we're seeing as the film camera. And I just think that's lazy. Anyway.
I think it's called lazy or sloppy or just pathetic.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Well, so then the last thing, which is the most egregious, and regular listeners of our regular podcast will get this, but I counted not one, not two, but three instances of "I got this."
Oh, I totally forgot. I lost count.
Right? Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Yeah,
they,
I got this.
And it was two "I got this"s and one "we got this," which as we all know, "I got this" is the trope of comic books that is killing the industry today. And of course, it would make it into this movie three times. So.
Well, you know, three. It's three times better. It's like they come in threes. They got these. Yeah, that's annoying.
Right. Boy,
it's a gift that keeps on giving, this movie. Ugh.
So clearly you and I are both in the camp, along with the rest of the critical world, who say that this movie is but more garbage from DC. That said, what I'll tell you is I attempted to go see it Friday. I'm in New York City. I attempted to go see it Friday. I'm like, I'll go to a 5 o'clock movie. I'll go before everything's up. I get to the theater, and every showing is sold out until 9 o'clock. So clearly it's resonating with somebody, right? I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes, and while the critics have got 26%, you know, the critics' rating is 26%, the audience rating is at 73%. All right. And now I'm looking at Box Office Mojo, and it looks as if it's taking $135.1 million for the weekend, which beats Guardians of the Galaxy's $94.3 million in 2014. So this is now the highest grossing movie, August release movie ever. So now either a lot of people went to the movie theater and are disappointed, or it's resonating with somebody.
I just don't see how the word of mouth is going to carry this film.
Yeah, but you just see what next week the drop looks like. Yeah,
I think I saw a headline saying where there was a theater chain in Mexico that was already dropping it from theaters.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw it. It was a packed house, but by the end of it, people were laughing out loud. There was that one sequence where the Enchantress demon thing is says, "Oh, I know what you guys really want." And Will Smith wanted to be with his daughter. Harley Quinn wanted to have a normal family life with the Joker. Yeah. El Diablo wanted to hang out with his family. Or no, he was whatever it was. And then you have the Diablo guy going, "It's not real."
Yeah.
And then they were just standing there, like it was like a Super Friends plot twist. Like, "It's not real." And that's when people started laughing. And, like, they actually couldn't believe what was going on. But, you know, at the end of the day, it had a lot of action sequences. And that was the other thing. These were action sequences. This felt like a video game. To me, this was a video game where you got to kill the big boss at the end of it. And there are cut scenes in between the fighting sequences. Yep. And you have the little character moments, such as they were, or the origin stories, as cut scenes in between crazy ass action scenes. And maybe that's just what people were signed up for, and maybe that's what they got, and that is what they got, and maybe they enjoyed it. But for me, I was like, oh, well, the video game is going to be pretty easy to play. I already know all the levels, right? And maybe my expectations, I will admit, were very low. I did feel like I saw the trailer about 17 times.
Oh, yeah. There were so many trailers of this, and it was just so – I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I think this is suffering from the same problems that Batman v Superman suffered, in that it's attempting to apply a filter of darkness and grittiness and all this sort of stuff to the DC universe that personally I believe should be a bit brighter and a bit more – That's more personal, I understand. But that said, again, you know, a lot of people like Batman v Superman. I bet you a lot of people are gonna like this. I'm poking around online. I see people saying I liked it. You know, that I see people who know what they're talking about saying it's garbage, like we're saying. So I mean, I think, you know, personally, I think we know kind of what we're talking about. But
my only thing is that I do feel like this is my final point, really, is that this was DC's chance to go, okay, you know what? Everybody accuses us of being dark. We're going to make a film that's about killers and people who are locked up for life. They're going to do something that's going to end up being good. But instead, they said, you know what? All of these killers and these crazy people who murder people and do all this stuff, they're just misunderstood. You know, they just really want to be loved. They, you know, he's a good dad at the end of the day. So that's really important. At one point, Will Smith is saying something, something, yo, because I'm evil.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? No bad guy would ever call their life's work as evil. No. Maybe I'm a bad guy. You don't want to mess with me. I'm a bad dude. But no one would ever say, I am an evil person. And like, I get it. Maybe they were just trying. DC was going to do. This is going to be their Deadpool.
Yeah.
Where they would be able to have a romp that would stick with you, that would make you ask questions about what heroism really is. And at the end of the day, they tried to make it a comedy at the end of every serious sequence, and they tried to give you crazy violent action sequences that were undercut by CG character violence, right? So they got to the edge of the deep end of the pool, and then they just – They backed up and decided just to wade into it, using the lap.
It's more fumbling on DC Entertainment, and it's just sad. And the thing is, and I know that they're trying to build up as much as they can on the shoulders of Ben Affleck as our new Batman, and that's what we got from the mid-credit teaser, that it's, you know, kind of leading the way into Justice League. Although Justice League is not the next DC movie, the next DC movie will be Wonder Woman next summer. which, you know, after seeing the trailer after Comic-Con, the World War One period piece, I'm actually pretty excited about that. I'm hoping that the damage was already done too late to save this, and that DC course corrects moving forward on the next batch of movies. All right. Well, so at the end of the day, Suicide Squad, more my opinion, more garbage. I gotta give it a D plus.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a D minus because I had a really good dinner before it, and right, if I wasn't gonna go see the film, I would have had that dinner.
All right. So if you saw Suicide Squad and you agree with us or disagree with us, go over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this post for the show, and you can tell us what you think of the movie. We're going to take a bit of a hiatus on the movies, and we're gonna reconvene in November for Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange. So.
Oh, that should be fun. Aren't you looking?
I am looking forward to that one.
Let's take a break from. That's going to be fun to look at.
It should be interesting. If it's not too Inception-y, but we'll see. That trailer played before this movie. I was like, ooh, seeing it on the big screen. I hadn't seen the new trailer up on the big screen. I'm like, all right, that's gonna be pretty cool. Yeah.
We had Dunkirk, which like
I saw Dunkirk as well too. That trailer is really good.
Great.
All right. I can't wait until Connor resurfaces from his his escape and to hear what he thinks of this. We'll probably revisit that on the regular iFanboy podcast. So Mike, absolutely. Thanks for joining us this time around. I'm sorry you had to deal with it.
I ended up getting so worked up. I ended up taking my shirt off in addition to my shoes and socks. I don't know. It just really burned me up. You know, El Diablo. Diablo inside.
All right. So until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Diablo Mike.